Parsha Shrei, we're doing part two of the summary, but because a lot of people weren't here last night, we're going to quickly remind ourselves what we saw. And we'll begin with a quick overview, only this time we'll add a little bit more details to fill in the gaps for those who weren't here last night. Our Parsha Re'eh begins with Moshe telling the Jewish people, "Behold, I'm giving you the choice of blessing or curse." Jews always have a choice of going for the optimal best, or otherwise they'll get cursed. They don't have a choice to go to the middle ground. And he gives Moshe points out, b'chira chofshit, that we have free choice. He says, choose which way you want to go, stick to the Torah and the mitzvahs, and you'll be blessed. When you enter the land of Israel, we have a commandment to mount six tribes on our Gerizim, six tribes on our Eval, the Kohanim and Levim in between. And then we did this. It was a one-time ordeal where we proclaimed that we're accepting the Torah and we're accepting that we will be blessed if we perform and we will be cursed if we do not. Moshe tells them, you're coming into the land of Israel, you have to be extra careful to keep the mitzvos. And again, Moshe stresses getting rid of the Avodah Zarah. And Moshe Rabbeinu gives us more details, says we have to get rid of all the idols, destroy the trees that they served as idols, destroy the names, we have to get rid of the names, change the names of the places they used for worship, be it the high mountaintops, and here we discuss the fact that the Goyim always used to take the high hilltops to serve Avodah Zarah, and to counter them, Avram took the highest mountain, he took Har HaMoriah to serve Hashem, and we brought the halacha that ordinarily we have a mitzvah to place our shul, it's supposed to be the highest building, and Hashem tells us when we enter the land of Israel, so the high hilltops and the high mountains where they would serve Avodah Zarah, we have a mitzvah to destroy the Avodah Zarah that's there. And we should be focused on the one place which Hashem set aside that will be our Beis HaMikdash. And we pointed out that the Torah doesn't identify where the Beis HaMikdash is, and we brought from the Rambam three reasons, the main reason being that the tribes shouldn't fight over who's going to merit to have the Beis HaMikdash in their portion. And we also brought the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim that Hashem didn't want us to spend our times focusing only on the sacrifice, on the sacrifices, but rather the other mitzvot are the main focus of the Torah, and that's why there's only one place that's acceptable to bring sacrifices long-term, and that is in the Beit HaMikdash. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people they will eat the sacrifices there, and they will rejoice. And we mentioned the Rambam about the idea of there being an abundance of food in Yerushalayim, and therefore the prices of food were low, and therefore everyone could rejoice, and everyone would easily share with other people because they had an abundance of food. Moshe tells the Jewish people, when you come into the land of Israel, so things are going to be different. And here we discussed how they were different. Either that in the Midbar they were permitted to eat animals without shechita, and in Eretz Yisrael they were obligated to shecht, or the other extreme, that in the desert the Jews were obligated to, if they wanted to eat meat, they had to bring it as a sacrifice. And in the land of Israel, now they would be permitted to eat meat for their own pleasure without bringing it as a sacrifice. We're past Cheni now. Moshe reminds the Jewish people not to eat the blood, and he stresses it three times, one after the other. We discussed that in Egypt they had ordinarily eaten the blood, and they had used the blood as part of the sacrifice for the demons, the Shedim, and that's why the Torah has to stress. You're going to be allowed to eat meat in your private home. Just be careful with this mitzvah. Be careful not to eat the blood. Yeah.
Is there three different reasons why you shouldn't eat the blood? Why is he mentioned it three times?
So this, the Mefarshim expand on what's he coming to enumerate. Each time it's coming to include something else, to be careful not to eat the blood. Really, there are five warnings here. There's a Medrash that says that there are five different types of blood that are forbidden. In truth, the way it works is that the blood of the animals is forbidden to be eaten. So let's say we shecht an animal and blood comes out, we cannot eat that blood. What happens when you have a piece of meat that's raw? You wipe off the blood and there's blood inside the piece of meat. So technically speaking, one may eat that piece of meat, even though there's blood inside. The reason we have to salt the meat is because we say that when we cook the meat, the blood moves from place to place. And blood that is in the meat, so long as it's in its place, you're allowed to eat it. Once it moves from place to place, then it becomes forbidden. So because you're going to want to cook the meat, that's why you have to salt the meat. The salting, halachically, we say you have to wash off the meat. That's called hadachah rishonah, prior washing.
Don't let
then you put off salt, then you put salt on the meat, and then after it sits a certain amount of time, you wash off the salt with the blood. Now, technically, there's still blood inside. We say that blood isn't called dam, that's called muhal. That's something else. Now, biologically, maybe you cannot discern between this blood and the blood that came out. But halachically, we say that what remains inside the meat, that's not blood. After the salting process, what you see is not blood. That's why, did you ever wonder, you buy chicken, you see there's all kinds of red blood there. What is that? So I thought they salted the meat. Yeah, they salted it. This isn't blood that was salted, because that they wash off. The blood that comes out, they wash off. Now, anything else we say is muhal. That's something else. That's not blood. So that's a halachic term. Biologically, as far as I know, there's no difference. But halachically, where that we say is not blood, we're not concerned about that. And then you could cook the food. Let's say one were to roast the food. So then we say when you roast, when you put something by a fire, the fire draws out the blood. And that's good enough. You don't have to salt it. That's why liver, for example, we say that salting isn't going to be enough because the liver is filled with dung, with blood. So the only way to make liver kosher is to roast it. People sometimes buy liver in the store and they see it as a kosher symbol. But if they read closely, it says the liver is kosher but must be roasted. Sometimes it says it in Hebrew. So you have to be careful that when you buy liver, sometimes they're assuming you're going to roast it. It used to be that they always assumed you'd roast it. Today, you could buy liver that's pre-roasted, that they already roasted for you, and it's kosher, and you could do whatever you want with it. But this is a new phenomenon. Ordinarily, when they'd sell liver in the stores, it was liver that everyone knew they had to roast, and everyone used to roast liver. So when we say you're not allowed to eat blood, that means blood that came out of the animal, blood that's going to move within the animal. But technically, there are going to be instances that you could eat blood. And for example, we said you could eat a raw piece of meat. If you're not going to cook it, then the blood isn't moving from one place in the meat to another place in the meat. So then you could eat that piece of meat. Obviously, there are a lot of details here that we're not going into. What about a vein filled with blood, etc.? We're not going into all the details, but in general, that's the picture. That's why we salt meat.
So in general, we could eat raw meat.
We could eat raw meat, provided that it is done correctly, that we clean off the blood that you see on the surface. Yeah. Right. Again, we're not going into all the details. It's interesting that the Gemara says that Misha da'ato yafa, whoever has beautiful de'ah, he eats raw meat. So the Gemara, it always bothered me. That's called da'ato yafa. He has a good de'ah. That's disgusting. Da'ato yafa means his nature is of a beautiful. He has a beautiful nature. So it bothered me. And then I asked Rav Giat once. So he told me, that Gemara is Lashon Sagina Ho. The Gemara is saying it like an opposite. When we speak about a blind man, we say a person has a lot of light. So that's a nice way of saying a person who doesn't see any light. We say he has a lot of light. That's Lashon Sagina Ho. So the Gemara also, when it describes the person who eats raw meat, you could call it sarcasm. But the idea isn't sarcasm as much as the idea is to say things in a nice way. So the Torah, when it describes the animals that are impure, it says they are lo Torah, not pure. It doesn't say they are tameh. The Torah tries to use a lashon nekiya. So the Gemara also tries to use a nicer term. Yeah.
It says that we don't eat the blood because that's the life of the animal?
It says that also, yeah.
So it seems like to eat the that I guess that makes it much more a spiritual act than it is a physical act.
Well, so that's a nice point what you're saying. The Mefarshim speak about that the Torah in many ways is trying to stress we should be spiritual people. The aspects of kashrus, the ideas behind them, to a great extent have to do with spirituality. We're going to see in our parsha, the Torah discusses the kosher animals and the non-kosher animals, and it begins with, "Banim atem nashem elokechem," you are sons of God. And some of the mefarshim explain that what the Torah is saying is that you're supposed to be on a high spiritual level. And therefore Hashem is telling us, don't eat these foods because they're not good for you spiritually. This doesn't mean health-wise. This means spiritually. We say that if one eats the lev, if one eats the heart, it's metamtem es lev. It causes him to be less smart. So what does that mean? It's on a spiritual level, it's kosher. You could eat animal heart. When you're buying salami and stuff like that, there's a good possibility that there are parts of the heart that are there.
And brains also.
Okay. I don't remember. The Gemara says something about the brain, but I don't remember what it says.
Good or bad?
I think bad. I think, but I don't remember what... I don't remember the Gemara.
Yeah? Also Ashkenazi, no?
I don't know. Yeah?
These days, from a purely scientific point of view, you probably have to stay away from brains.
Why?
Brains are where some of our new diseases are.
No, I'm
sure. Yeah?
Yeah. Like, what's her name? Mad cow's disease.
Okay.
It's in that cow's brains. That's how we get it. That's how we transfer it.
Okay. Keep that in mind. Excuse the pun. Okay. The Torah tells us that we have to bring our vows.
If we're in the animal section, if by any chance they were able to make a pig eat its cud,
we'll get to that. Let's wait. That's in the Rambam. We'll see tonight.
Well, would we be able to eat?
So let's see the Rambam. You tell me. We shall see, God willing. The Torah tells us that we have to bring our vows, the maaser, the grains, the wines, the firstborns. All our vows have to be brought to be eaten in Jerusalem, as we discussed yesterday. And we have a special mitzvah in the land of Israel, being that the Levim don't get a portion of the land. So in the land of Israel, we have a special mitzvah to support them, either from the maaser that they're supposed to get, or if we don't have enough maaser, so we give them from our maaser sheni, or we give them from our own food. The idea is that the Levi should be set aside for learning Torah and teaching us Torah, and therefore we have to take care of them. And this is as far as we got, basically. We're holding by Shlishi. The Torah tells us that when we get rid of the nations in the land of Israel, so we have to be careful not to think that we could learn from them how to serve our God. One could say, why were these nations wiped out of the land of Israel? Because they were serving idols. That's what the Torah says, because they were serving idols. But one could mistakenly say, how did they serve their idols? So one idol is called Marculis. How did they serve it? They'd have like bowling pins. They'd have rocks, three rocks, two and then one on top, and they'd throw a rock at it. And that's how they'd serve that idol. They had an idol named Baal Peor. How did they serve it? They'd go to the bathroom in front of that idol. So one could say that these ways of serving a god are really good ways of serving a god. But the only reason why these nations were punished is because Hashem says, I want you to serve me that way. Don't serve the other gods that way. So that's a mistake. The Torah says, don't look at the nations around you and try to figure out, I'll do like them. I'll serve Hashem like they serve their gods. Hashem says, I'm telling you exactly what I want. Do the mitzvahs exactly how I say. Don't add, don't take anything away. Do exactly what I'm saying. And here we see two things. A, Hashem is telling us, don't try to learn from the nations around you. And B, Hashem is telling us, don't change from what I'm telling you. Don't add and don't degrade. And the juxtaposition points out to us that if one changes from what the Torah says, then that's the equivalent of serving idols. A person can't say, I want to serve Hashem, so maybe Hashem wants me this morning to put three sets of tefillin on my head. Hashem told you once one set of tefillin. You add it, so it's no different than if you invent your own religion. Hashem says, this is what I want. And remember this point, because we're going to see an extension of this with regard to Ger Toshav. God willing, tonight I hope we'll get to learn the Rambam on Ger Toshav a little bit. Guys ask questions every week about Ger Toshav, so I thought it's about time we see a quick summary of the laws of Ger Toshav. I said, that's why I said three. I didn't say two. I was waiting for you. Didn't I say three? I said three, right?
Isn't that very kind of Hashem? Because then we don't have to, like, because it's simple. We know what we have to do, and we don't have to try to do more.
Well, it's simple on the one hand, but on the other hand, God built within us a need for ingenuity. And every person wants to leave his mark. So the Torah tells us the place to leave your mark is in learning Torah. Every person has a section in Torah that no one else can get. What you can derive in Torah, no one else can derive. You can attain chidushim in Torah that no one else has the potential to do other than you. That's why it's so critical that if a person has chidushim, he should write them down. You notice something, write it down. It's important. No one else could get what you could get. But Hashem is telling us, in the performance of the mitzvahs, do it the way I said. Don't change. But on the one hand, that makes it easier. But on the other hand, it also makes it more difficult because every person wants to feel like he did something. That's why people look for chumras. Some people look for chumras because they're pious. But most people look for chumras because I'm doing this. This is what I do.
What's a chumras?
Extra stringencies. People want to feel like they're doing one up. Hashem says, don't do like they do, because they do all the things that I find disgusting. They even sacrifice their sons and daughters in fire to their gods. And here we see that Hashem finds it disgusting, in case someone had room to doubt. Because there are different instances where the Navi seems to indicate otherwise, we find that Avram was told, bring up your son. We find that there was a war, and during the war, it's unclear exactly what happened. We were winning the war, and suddenly the opposing king and Malachim took either his son or the son of the other king, and he sacrificed them, and suddenly we couldn't continue succeeding the war. So you read the Pesukim, it's unclear why by his sacrificing either his son or someone else's son, did God not allow us to continue fighting the war? So one understanding says that we had joined forces with a non-Jewish king to go against this third king. And we hadn't protected that non-Jewish king's son well enough. And that's how our foe was able to capture our partner's son and sacrifice him. And that's why God was upset at us. But at any rate, when you read the Pesukim, it's unclear. So Hashem says, Asher lo amarti, lo tziviti, velo ala libi. I didn't even think about it. I didn't say it to Avram. I just said, bring your son up. I never commanded it. God said, it's disgusting. I never even thought of it. When you see this king who sacrifices the son, and it seems like that helps him out, God says, I didn't even entertain the thought. Yeah?
So what does it mean? I mean, it says that Hashem said that he does want us to serve him like this? What does that mean, with devotion?
Hashem says, I do not want you to serve me like the nations serve their God. Okay. Hashem says very clearly, do not learn from their ways. This isn't the way I want you to serve me. Do exactly what I said in the Torah, not less and not more.
Mm-hmm. Where does it say that he's disgusted by
the last pasuk in Perek Lamed Beis, in Perek Yud Beis, the last pasuk in the 12th chapter, pasuk Lamed Aleph, 31.
What does it say? Do exactly what I say and not
anything else? Less and not more. That's the first pasuk in Perek Yud Gimel.
So
it also said it in last week's parasha.
If that's the case,
it says not more than not less.
Right.
Not more, not less. Not more, not less. It means not a little bit this way and not a little bit that way. So, if that's the case, and it is, then how can Jews in Hutzlaritz make the case for reform and conservative?
Reform and conservative, they don't have a case because of this.
That's what I'm saying. But
if you're interested in that, so that's a point we should really go into in 2 weeks from now.
Okay.
Remind me, God willing. There, the psukim are much stronger about the fact that the Torah is eternal. Unless guys want to go into it now.
No, I can wait 2 weeks.
Well, it's also a question.
I'm really curious about how intelligent people can make that leap of, hey, there's something right in front of us that says, don't do this.
But there's another question that's connected to that question.
No, neither add to nor detract from my Torah.
Right.
Not this bit or not this bit. Not at all. Don't just do what I say. Just don't any. And in America, we have two forms of Judaism that do
small. But
I don't think that intelligent people are making a case for it. It's interesting that even the so-called rabbis, very often, when they're marrying their own kids, they get an Orthodox rabbi to do it. A lot of it is because people, like the Rambam says, when people sin, usually it's because they have a Yetzer Hara. And usually it's a Yetzer Hara for illicit relationships. Sometimes it's for other things. But that blinds a person. All of us are blinded to an extent by it. You read the newspaper today, you could get very upset at what's going on in the country. But in truth, if you look in the mirror, then you could get very upset at what you see. Because each of us, to an extent, is being blinded by what we want, and that supersedes what we should be doing. Now, to what extent that goes, so that depends on the position you have. And if a person doesn't fix that, then if he'll get to the position of Rosh Memshala, then he'll also mess up, like all those that preceded him. And it's very, very difficult to perfect oneself, and almost no one does. So to look at someone else and say, he's in that position and he's messing up, well, I don't have to call the shots for the whole country. So when I'm off, it only affects me and the people I affect. The higher a person goes up, the more, when he's slightly off, it affects more people. That's why we say that Hashem watches tzaddik, and then he says on a hair's width, you're off on a hair's width, God takes a tzaddik to task on that.
Wasn't there a midrash on King Menashe or something? If you were in my position, you would be able to.
There, the Gemara says a little differently. The Gemara says that one Amora was speaking badly about Menashe, that he was serving idols. And Menashe, the king of Yehuda, showed up to him in a dream. And he told him, if you would have been in my time, you would have been picking up your cloak to run to Avodah Zarah. You don't know what Yetzer Hara there was in that time. But that's a different point. That's
I just want to, sorry to add on to the questions, but I mean, the Gemara is one of the most important books that we have next to the Torah, and the Gemara is pretty much filled with not Chas V'Shalom, that it's not adding or taking away, but rabbis that are trying to. One rabbi thinks that it's that you have to guard 6 hours after eating meat, and the other thinks it's one. So it's not all as simple as just, you know.
Okay, once you guys are opening this, we'll deal with it.
Elucidation is different than adding or taking.
Understand.
Okay, but it's not, we don't have one person who says, actually, I we don't have a Moshe. The Moshe is not alive, so
understand,
we can't.
Understand.
You know, it's
not black and white.
Right. We don't have anyone who says, by the way, I actually know everything that Hashem said.
Well, could you
if we did,
they
would be nice to have
that. If we did, we'd
call them
crazy.
Yeah. I'm with you. Continue. So let's deal with all the points that were raised. The question was, what do we do with people who do want to change from what the Torah says? And what do we do with what our rabbis instituted? Siag. So in truth, we have to know that the Torah says don't add and don't retract. And we're going to see that the Torah says, I want to quote you from the Rambam, that's what I'm looking for over here. I'm not finding it.
Show me the idea, for example.
Who said that's offense?
It's written in the Torah specifically.
It seems to be that halachically we say it's an Isra Doraisa, yeah. The Rambam says, Hechos Yisod de HaTorah Perek Tes. Says the Rambam, Davar Baru Umfurash BaTorah. There's something clear and explicit in the Torah. Shehi Mitzvah, that the Torah is a mitzvah, Omedet Le'olam Ulol Me'olamim. It is going to be eternal. The Torah itself states that it is not going to change. En la shinui, there will be no change. Velo giraon, and nothing will be taken away from the Torah. Velo tosefet, nothing added. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Et kol hadavar asher anochim tzaveh etchem, our parsha, what you pointed out, everything that I'm commanding you, oto tishmeru la'asot, that you should be careful to perform. Lo tosef alav, do not add to it, velo tigra mimenu, and do not detract from it. So the Rambam begins, when he lays this foundation, he says it is clear and explicit in the Torah. The Torah is going to be eternal the way it was given. Says the Rambam, that's from our parsha, as you noted. V'ne'emar, and the pasuk says, V'haniglot, that's what I said, we'll see in 2-3 weeks. V'haniglot, the mitzvot that are revealed, Hashem tells us, lanu ulvaneinu, they are for us and our children, ad olam, forever, la'asot, to perform, et kol divrei Torah azot, this whole Torah. So the Torah clearly states that the Torah is given forever. It's not going to change. Halamanta, from here you could derive, shekol divrei Torah, all of the words of the Torah, mitzuvin anu la'asotan, we are commanded to perform them ad olam, forever. V'chen umer, and so too the pasuk says, chukat olam ledorotechem. This is a law, a decree, forever, for all your generations. This is stated 8 times in the Torah. This pasuk, chukat olam ledorotechem. V'ne'emar, lo b'shamayim hi, and the Torah says, the Torah itself says, I don't exist in heavens. I was given to mankind. And from here we derive that a Navi is not allowed to introduce any new thing. The Rambam rules that if a Navi walks into Beis Medrash, and we have a discussion, and some of the rabbis say the halacha is this way, some of the rabbis say the halacha is this way, and the Navi walks in, and he says, I was sent from heaven, you know me, I'm the Navi, you've been trusting me until now, I've made the sun stop, I've done all the wonderful signs that a Navi could do, and from heaven they sent me to tell you that the halacha is one way. So we say, hold it, just 1 second, we'll prepare the gallows, we're going to hang you. Navi Sheker. Why? Because of this concept. Lo b'shamayim hi. To that extent, the Rambam takes it. That we say the Torah is not in the heavens, that a Navi can't walk in and even tell us which way the halachic ruling should go. Even if he's a Navi.
That's written in the next paragraph too, in this parasha.